Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 92, Simile, Metaphor, and Isness. Simile is an easy one. It's similar, using like or as. This is like this, or this is as that, or what have you. Metaphor, sort of perhaps like metaphysical. It's beyond the immediate, comparing to something in a larger, broader way, and not specifically identifying with like or as. And isness? It is what it is. So a pretty simple look at these principles, you might call them, these viewpoints, and how they affect how we perceive and experience the world and flavor our artistic creativity. This is your host, Monk. Thank you for listening. This show is going to go at it from two basic angles, life in general and as an artist. More specifically writing, since that's what I know most. And the basic theory is that there are two tracks that we work on, so to speak, along the lines of the yin and yang, right brain, left brain, subjective, objective. Either we are comparing things, as in specifically simile, and in a wider sense, metaphor, or we are seeing into, perceiving, or experiencing simply what is. So, some examples that came to mind, out on my patio, I have a few herbs, and when some of the little kids visit, have them, which I like to do, is just rub my fingers on the sage, rosemary, basil, and then take a sniff. And it's fun to watch the kids experience that. My experience is that when I smell it, it's like, what does it smell like? And I draw a blank, because the rosemary smells like rosemary, and the sage smells like sage. And the basil, you get the drift. So there's a certain isness that is beyond comparison, and in most senses is not poetic and does not lead to flowery language. Some of the best examples, one of Basho's haiku is one of my favorites. It's not like anything they compare it to, the summer moon. It's not like anything they compare it to, the summer moon. And another from Basho, which is at first it seems ridiculously simple, but there's a depth to it. And I just found today the a longer version. The short version is, go to the pine if you want to learn about the pine, or the bamboo if you want to learn about the bamboo. And that actually, what got me really into haiku was a bunch of years ago reading a book by Kenneth Yasuda, the Japanese haiku. And it was kind of a combination of the Basho quote and that book that just got me into the depths of awareness, I guess along the lines of sometimes what called the one-pointed meditation. Sometimes people do that with a candle flame, but it got me realizing that if I was going to really write a good haiku about, say, the pines, that I had to really be with the pines. So that got me more into just sit and stare or look at or be with the pine. Pine as the pine, and yet pine as representing whatever it is, the flower, whatever, that to really be with that, take, just like Basho says, learn from the pine about the pine. And then some of what happens from that is, different awarenesses and insights and learning what happens. I think it, to me, it touches into the indigenous perspective of in the field, or with all my relations, knowledge and awareness that comes from just knowing that. There are sometimes in the flower boxes on the patio, there's some stuff growing, and some people would visit and say, "Oh yeah, you should clean those out." But I would say, "No." When I'm sitting here during the day and I see the sparrows come, and there's something in those quote weeds or little grasses growing that they peck at. So I wouldn't know that from from just looking at it and thinking, "Oh, that's not the pretty flowers that go in the flower boxes, but there's a function to it." So it's that kind of just doing nothing awareness that can lead to a deeper knowledge, deeper connection, deeper understanding, and in a literary sense, translate into some poems or haiku. Now, one thing I for some years I got into a kind of anti-simile, even though I love metaphor in my writings, and I encouraged just describing things, how they are. And that, I don't know, I didn't sort of chart it, but to me, it strengthened my voice. It strengthened my poetry to be more declarative and stronger. And then, some years back, I went back to integrating both, because I enjoy the fun and the play of, this is like this is like this, and the sun is like an orange, and so forth. And sometimes that can seem sort of silly or just metaphorical, but then there can be another level that is a reality to it, because the sunlight nurtures and helps things grow. So it's nurturing the orange tree, and so the sun and the orange do have a connection. So there's, again, that subjective objective layers, depends on which angle you're at, how you look at it, they do overlap. But I think literarily, writing-wise, poetry and otherwise, it's helpful to explore when you're going at simile, when you're just going for the direct isness, and when you're going for the broader metaphor. Metaphor is one of my favorite words, because I feel like it helps to synthesize and boil things down to their essences. We may say the society is like this or like that, and then that framework gives me a wider, to me, a truer, or helps my experience. Driving along the highway, it could be like one day it was like, oh, this is like a huge snake or a dragon or something, And that seems fanciful, but then driving along, it helps me connect to the bigger picture, that I am just a small piece on this winding, expansive, dragon-like structure. So, again, you pick and choose. Now, the Basho quote is helpful. I'll read that in length here. Go to the pine if you want to learn about the pine, or the bamboo if you want to learn about the bamboo. And in doing so, you must leave your subjective preoccupation with yourself. Otherwise, you impose yourself on the object and do not learn. Your poetry issues of its own accord when you and the object have become one, when you have plunged deep enough into the object to see something like a hidden glimmering there. However well phrased your poetry may be, if your feeling is not natural, if the object and yourself are separate, then your poetry is not true, but merely your subjective counterfeit. I think sometimes that's the difference between sort of more mental poetry that describes things as compared to certain poetry that is evocative or you know, touches the emotions more deeply. And then another line from Basho: no matter where your interest lies, you will not be able to accomplish anything unless you bring your deepest devotion to it. So that's, again, Basho touches on some of what frequently referenced the Zen stories and Zen practice is driving at direct perception, direct experience, whether it is learning of one's own true nature or just perceiving something in particular or the world in general as what it is that takes it's hard to describe. It just takes getting beyond sort of a duality view or the comparison view. I think that sometimes there's a level that we do, and this is again this sort of theory here, that we do two things. I think we tend as people to over compare, and that we tend to see, oh, this reminds me of this, and this reminds me of this, and she reminds me of that, and he reminds me of this. And when you meet someone, I think our minds tend to go towards that comparison. It's a way of categorizing and familiarizing ourselves, that this reminds me of this, which I like, or that reminds me of that, which I don't like, so I stay away from it. And it's not an absolute. That can be helpful. But then again, I think there's times that overrides just being and experiencing someone or something for what it is. And that can be a little bit scary, because all of a sudden the comparisons fall away and you just have to be present in the moment with what is. And my experiences with some people are like that some people, it's just being with that person is fully being with the person. And then sometimes other people, again, either both have their place, but sometimes with people there's a lot of what I'll call catch up. You know, not the condiment, but catch, which is, you know, how's your day going? Well, I did this, and then I did that, and now I'm doing this, and I talked to so-and-so, he's doing fine, she's doing fine, how's him, how's her? And that kind of goes on, and it has its place, but it tends to be all very catch-up, whereas the just being in the moment, being with someone, tends to not highlight that. I mean, that stuff may arise in conversation, but I think some of the deepest connections I've had and have with people are when it is simply being with that particular person or persons. And it, I guess along the lines of what Basho says, there's a kind of oneness experience that happens. So with oneness, there is, in essence, nothing to compare it to. Which I suppose gets into all layers of metaphysics and theology and what have you, but there just becomes an isness. It's not like anything you can compare it to. Again, along the lines of just the isness and the Taoist flow, that Zen saying, when hungry, eat, when tired, sleep. It's like the individualness goes away, the ego goes away, and one can merge with the flow more easily. And another area that the categorizing, labeling again, it cuts both ways. It can be helpful or not helpful. If that's poison ivy, you want to know what it is and label it and stay away from it. If that's a strawberry, you want to know what it is so you can eat it. The Basho haiku, I don't know which tree it comes from, that fragrance. I don't know which tree it comes from, that fragrance. So with that haiku, that he's going beyond the having to know everything and having to label everything and just experiencing the fragrance of it and experiencing, you know, the essence of it, which is beyond the specific label. So that again is another angle of you know, the essence of something can be labeled, or like the sage smells like sage, or it's it just smells good. Now on a personal level, again, I think that it works both ways. One is sometimes counseled best, do not compare yourself with others. You are a unique individual, and don't compare yourself with people. You know, it leads to trouble of who's doing better and who's doing worse when each of us has our own function. Then again, sometimes I have used comparison to help me, to goad me on, or that person does something I'd like to do more of, so I'm going to compare myself, or a certain writer that I'm comparing myself to, you know, what did he do after he wrote this or wrote that? And so it can be helpful to compare, but then I think there's also a place where, you know, to find one's original voice, comparison is dangerous. So again, it's this overlap. And but I think the gist of what I'm getting at with this show is that the awareness, there's like almost like a awareness that is beyond or transcends or within or combines those two. So I think it can be helpful. This is something that I'm just starting to explore more specifically, as in preparing for the show, it highlighted this awareness to me. Times when I am in a comparing mode, and times when I'm just sort of going into the deeper isness mode. And, you know, something just is what it is. How do you describe water? That's a tricky one, too. To me, the mind kind of goes blank. How do you describe that? So, some food for thought, some food for experience. Pretty simple topic this week, but hopefully to give people something to ponder and some kind of help with one's own life experience and literarily as things come up, the choices we make when writing, or even in arts, whether to be, you know, the literalness of a still life or the quirkiness of a Picasso, and things look all over the place, and that whole, the whole era of the arts and abstraction. So those are other angles to go at it. I suppose the concrete and the abstract work too. Haiku more focuses on the concrete, the directness and the isness, and does not go off for abstractions or too much comparison. But I think metaphor is a natural part of things. It's just implied within things, and it's hard to avoid. But, I think helping to do it consciously makes the metaphor stronger. Sometimes with essays, that's where the metaphor as an overriding theme may kick in, as to, okay, I'm comparing this whole society to a hamster in a cage or something like that, where it just goes on the treadmill, and that kind of metaphor, I think, is on a wider level that helps provide a helpful framework, at least for me. So I guess that's that, and thanks for listening, and we'll go out with a song from Spoken Word Song by John Trudell. It is what it is.
It is what it is. So no use in wishing, hoping, and wanting. And those if only, and those coulda, shoulda, and wouldas are just troubles for the head. And crying around about most anything is just a waste of tears. What it is, life doesn't put anything in front of us that we can't handle. It's all in the handling. Coherent or incoherent. Clarity or chaos. Everything that ever happens is there to make us stronger. And when we understand, our strength gets stronger. And when we don't understand, our weaknesses get stronger. It's an inevitability. Falling down, falls down, how down, and falling down,
falling down, falls down, how down, falling down, fall.
And when getting back up gets back up, how up can getting back up get back up? In the reality of being, reality waits for human recognition, to recognize the power of intelligence clearly used as a way of seeing, curing, healing spirit. It's not about whether we can or can't. It's about whether we will or we won't.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. The blamers and the blamed.
The blamers and the blamed.
Play a dangerous game.
Play a dangerous game.
Turning responsibility into another one of their casualties. Inside of ourselves and amongst ourselves. Desperating, while hidden behind the light, cast by our shadows. Life holds its breath, and alive wants us to live the gift we were given. It's a decision we make.
It is what
it is. What it is. So no use in wishing, hoping, and wanting. And those if only, and those coulda, shoulda, and wouldas are just troubles for the head. And crying around about most anything is just a waste of tears.